I am Sean O'Hara. I am the director of the Honolulu Museum of Art. I've been the director now for the past little over 2 years. I'm the director until next week.
Yeah, You start at the Kemper very soon. Why are you leaving, Sean?
As been mentioned in the past, the health of my spouse was a priority. Not to get in too much detail, because I'm sure your listeners might think it's a little private, but my spouse suffers from severe asthma, and I don't think anyone thought it would be affected by the atmosphere in Honolulu, like the sulfur dioxide. When I was growing up as a kid, it wasn't even a consideration. When I was working in London, my spouse developed some pretty bad asthma, and so we had to move her out of the country at the time, and it got better when she was in England. I mean, not in England. It got better when she left England. And the doctors here said that she had maxed out on her medication. So we didn't really have many choices. And then, of course, subsequent to this situation, I've been speaking to people. Actually, it turns out that asthma is actually a pretty major problem in Hawaii. For example, I didn't realize that Hawaii was one of the highest childhood asthma areas in the country. So it's a personal problem that sort of crept up, and this was the solution.
Mm-hmm. Understand. At what point did you find you would need to move?
Well, it happened quite over a period of time, the asthma issue, some doctors last summer basically said, there's no more medication, you're going to have to solve it by actually moving the family. So this is just something that I had to ponder over with the family over a number of months. It crept up on us, but then it became sort of a very hard reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Sure.
In the time you've been here, let's see, I think officially...
Well, I started on 1st of January.
Oh, okay. So about 2 years?
Yeah, a little over, yeah.
What do you feel are the important contributions of your time at the Honolulu Museum?
Well, I focused primarily on the art strategy.
Does that mean the programming, you mean? Or?
Yes, the programming and the activities of the museum. We focused the art strategy on Hawaii and the Pacific to make HOMA more relevant to the public. We are the Honolulu Museum of Art, and that will be the case forever. So that was important that we focused on the Pacific. And then, of course, we have a much larger collection, which covers the world, and the idea is to have that collection used to put a context on the programs that focus on Hawaii and the Pacific. The second thing I would say is that I worked very hard on creating more efficiencies. For example, combining departments. Combining activities that make sense, that sort of led to making the museum more financially sustainable, and it also led to donors having confidence in the museum to be able to raise a lot of money. We raised probably more money in the last year and a half than we've raised in a long time.
How was that raised?
Say it again?
How were those funds raised?
They were personal appeals to foundations, but these foundations were connected to families, and really they were about specific changes that we made to the museum that would be attractive to these people. So, for example, one family gave money to fund our shop move. We have a shop right now that's towards the back of the museum, and it made sense to move the shop to the front of the museum, where the visitors come in and leave, and to have that work hand-in-hand with the visitor center. And this is a standard practice across the museum world. And so this family foundation was very excited to see that and gave us the largest gift that they had given in a long time. And that was a good thing for the museum.
What other changes might we notice and attribute to this tenure?
Well, the other thing is that we reorganized the museum staffing structure to reflect the latest standard and professional museum practice. So, for example, we had many different departments that overlapped. We had three education departments, for example. And ultimately, and this is an issue with museums in general, ultimately the public only sees one institution, and they want to come in and they want to do one or two things. But museums are very complicated organisms, so they will often present themselves as they are organized. So you might have, this place to go to take an art lesson, but this place to take a tour, but this place to go off and do this other activity or hear a lecture. And that can be sort of complicated for the audience. And so, one of my proud achievements was to really bring a lot of those activities together so that the public benefited first and foremost. On the back end of that, it also meant that the museum staff were more efficient because they were coordinating their activities. They combined their budgets. They knew what each other was doing. So it was a very, it made a lot of sense, and it helped them with planning, and it helped inform their colleagues of what they were doing. It was a win-win situation for both the public and the museum.
I think it did involve the exit of over 30 of your staff members.
Well, there is a turnover in Hawaii, as you know. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country, and so good people can always move around very quickly. So when you make changes, not everyone is in line with those changes. So there are, there are many reasons why people move.
Mm-hmm. But as far this was all in pursuit of a stable financial future for the museum, correct?
Well, stable financial future is one aspect of it. It's really about being more effective in serving the public. That has to be the first part of any conversation. The finances are a means to an end, but serving the public is sort of the end in itself.
Could you describe the changes in the education department there, or at the
museum
school?
Sure.
Could you describe
sure.
these changes?
Absolutely. Well, let me introduce this way. When you're a visitor and you come to the museum, and the museum offers a multitude of things, you should be given the chance to do any of the things that are on offer. It's considered access. And this is why we exist as an institution. In the past, when you had more than one department, you may have to go to different places, do it at different times. You may not necessarily have access to all the activities so readily. And so what we were able to do was we have a senior executive head of what we call learning and engagement, and he headed one of the units in the past, but now he heads all the units from tours to outreach to art school lessons, other community activities. It's all under the same rubric, and you know, that just allowed the public to have a much simpler interaction with the museum in those areas, and it also meant that they could coordinate their activities better for better public service.
Most people do go either to see things or to go to a class, though, right? They don't usually go to do both at the same time.
It's interesting you say that. You know, people probably don't realize that the museum visitor is mostly tourists from Waikiki, for example. And so these people come generally for three things. They come for the museum exhibition that might be up, and it could be a permanent gallery like our French Impressionist collection, for example, which is quite famous. And then they would come for the shop and for the wonderful cafe that we have. And so, you know, I think those visitors tend not to be addressed in open conversation. I think, you know, you and I have discussed taking lessons and so on. But, you know, we have Shangri-La, for example, which is a great partnership between the museum and the Doris Duke Foundation. We have Spalding House as well. And so people are going to all of these areas. So a majority of the people that we have actually fall into that area. And
Taking classes, you're saying?
Yeah, well, and you know, part of that is that you know, it's not as accessible. You know, you might have to show up in the evening. You may have to register, you know, 3 months in advance. It's not that easy. And so the real move that we tried to make here was, once we combined those activities, we were able to then give people more options under one umbrella.
What percentage of the museum's visitors are tourists, say? Do you know?
We believe, and our numbers are getting more accurate by the day, but we believe that you know, maybe 3/4 of the visitors are tourists, and I think that the breakdown is that 3/4 of those are probably from the mainland United States, and the remaining are almost mainly from Japan. We're getting more visitors from China, but they're not at the same level as, say, our visitors from Japan or from the mainland. So I would say that those are the two major constituents that we serve right now. And we're looking to actually expand that. For example, we've offering a free shuttle from Waikiki now to come to the museum. There has been other ways of getting here, like the WikiWiki bus and so on, I believe. But we are now able to do that as part of our offering. And you know, it's really about placing the public first and understanding the nature of your audience. And you know, people probably don't think about this too much about a museum, but people will come here because we have two shops, we have two cafes, we have two museums, because we have Spalding House up in Makiki Heights, and there's a wonderful shop there, and a very popular cafe because of, you know, the atmosphere and the good food. But then we have the shop here down on Baratania, and the cafe, and you know, we just have to understand that, you know, people come here for the atmosphere, and they come here for you know, walking around, and you know, the art is part of the experience, but it may not be the main experience. And I think that's, again, it's easy to lose track of that, and you know, maybe, you know, we take tourists for granted in some cases, but I think that it's just important to sort of re-examine things on a regular basis.
Sorry, I must have missed it. So what percentage approximately are visitors, and what percentage are local people going to the museum?
We believe that it's around 3/4 are visitors, and maybe 1/4 are local. And I just want to say that, you know, many of those of the local visitors are taking art lessons, so they have a different sort of interaction demographic from the normal, say, museum gallery visitor who's coming in to look at an exhibition.
Exactly. I mean, the school is the primary way that so many in the community do interface with the museum. Could you describe
as I had when I was a kid.
Right, exactly.
It was the most, to me, it was the most significant experience of my life, and it ended up influencing my career because I took art lessons at the art school as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old.
I've looked at the schedule, the exhibition schedule coming up for the museum school. A number of the other community collaborators are no longer on the schedule, and there's a lot more emphasis on production from within the museum.
There are 50% of the exhibitions that take place in the Linacona building are community art groups. And the other 50% are split between students at the art school, staff shows, teacher shows, shows that have to do with the offerings that we do educationally. Because the history of that building is that it was established as a school, and it's owned by the state of Hawaii. We only have it on lease. And so there is this expectation requirement that education and school activities take precedence in that building. So, you know, we're trying to balance all the different requirements. And you know, ultimately, one thing that has been paramount in our minds as we are coming up to our reaccreditation as a museum, you know, people will look at Linacona as its own entity, but ultimately it's part of the museum. And we are an accredited museum with the American Alliance of Museums. And the American Alliance of Museums has requirements that help the public and help the museum serve the public better. And so one thing that we are responsible for is all activities that take place in a museum must be effectively managed by the museum.
Was that somehow not the case before?
I would say in the past, I would say there was probably a lot more free-flowing activity. But I would say that, and I would say that the requirements have gotten stricter over the years. It just so happens that I have been on accreditation panels for a number of years, and so I've done this many, many times. And I can tell you that one thing that we look for as an accreditation panel, a reaccreditation panel, is to make sure that the museum is in control of the activities and messaging that goes on. And so this is what we're doing right now.
So are there as many classes and teachers there as there used to be?
There are many. The teachers do come and go, and I would say technically there were probably a lot of teachers who probably remained on the payroll but hadn't taught for a while. So, you know, it depends on how you count that. In terms of classes, actually the number of classes are now at a more manageable size. You know, the key thing that I have really pushed in my tenure here has been making sure that you are able to serve the public within the means that you have available to you. It's very easy to say yes to everything that comes around, but ultimately, you know, the land of reality dictates what you're able to do. One of the things, if I can go back to something I said before, when I said that we were combining departments that did very similar work, you know, one advantage to that is that the efficiencies and the information that is gathered from that produces a more effective service. And you know, one of the things that you have when you have separate departments is that they interact in ways that maybe you wouldn't want that to happen. And so being able to coordinate your activities also means that you might have to reduce some of the events that you do, but then that's because you're not straining another department, for example. And that's just, you know, common sense, but it's also something that comes from good management, good structural management, good organizational management, good financial management. And I think that by combining those education departments, we were able to then have the departments work together in a more efficient and effective partnership.
What financial condition is the museum in now?
Oh, it's very stable. I'm very happy to say. I think the last 10 years have been incredibly beneficial to the sustainability of the museum. That was one of my responsibilities coming in over 2 years ago, was to stabilize the museum's finances and other areas related to that. I set myself a goal of achieving these areas of improvement over a two-year period, which I'm very happy and proud to say has been achieved. And
the reorganization, you mean? The reorganization.
Really improving the foundation of the museum, both financially and organizationally, to make sure that it's in tip-top shape and sustainable for the larger activities that will come down the road as the museum both expands physically as well as is able to serve people in new and exciting ways.
You're from this community, Sean. By the way, thank you so much for your comments today. You're from this community?
I am.
So that you brought a different perspective when you walked in that door.
I went to Hokulani Elementary School. I'm a local kid who went to a public high school.
You look at the community now differently, I'm sure, after your two-year tenure. What are the prospects, would you say, for art funding in this community?
Well, art funding in this community is really connected to the fact that we're an island. And because we're an island, or a series of islands, but we're isolated in certain ways, resources are going to be limited. So I would start by answering that question by saying that there's going to be a challenge always because of that physical geographical limitation, and it's going to make it difficult for physical access, shipping art, seeing art, buying art,
and fundraising, is that correct?
Yeah, and then for fundraising, and I would say that you know, the objective when you're raising money is not only to bring money in from your community, but bring in money from outside the community. This is something that I've always argued for wherever I lived, which is, you know, it's good to get money from your neighbors, but really you want to get money from tourists. You know, you want to get money from outside, because the objective of any community is to bring in resources, new resources. And, you know, the one thing that I learned about when running museums is that museums are connected to larger networks of funders, of museums, of artists, of other organizations, partner organizations, governmental connections. And I would say that it is essential for the health of the art community and funding the art community that organizations like the museum are heavily involved, because they bring in new networks in those various areas. So I'll give you one example which may address this issue about art funding. The Honolulu Biennial is coming up, and it is a very good, very important initiative for not only the arts community, but for the people of our state and our community. And the idea really is to bring in partner organizations and artists alike to create this once every couple year activity that can be promoted outside of Hawaii, and bring in people who are interested and resources and artists and connections. And so we're part of that. We have a series of exhibitions that are opening next month, actually, and beyond, as part of the biennial. But again, this is about attracting new funds and new connections and creating a broader network for exposure and involvement in the art community and abroad. And I would say that that goes to the heart of funding and supporting our art community.
Funders in the past have been sort of the moneyed families in town. Those are the people who've been on the art boards and have really sustained kind of the cultural life that we have. Those people are getting older. The money's getting divided. What do you see in that area?
Well, you know, the nature of the wealth has changed in Hawaii. I believe that... you know, maybe 30 or so years ago, when people were allowed to own more of their land versus leasing, brought in more wealth and spread out that wealth across the community. And I think that what that means is that the organizations that attract that wealth now have to have a broader, more public, open, accessible viewpoint, because they're going to be getting resources and support from a broad swathe of people. And so when I talk about focusing this museum on Hawaii, Hawaiian art, Hawaii artists, and the Pacific, it's really about being relevant to the broader community and to attract that support. I had always talked about being relevant and being sustainable, but relevance leads to sustainability.
How would you describe the art scene in Hawaii then, Sean? As you found it and as you leave it.
Well, so first of all, I have to say that it is incredibly vibrant, incredibly creative. It's creative because... you know, in Hawaii, again, we are, you know, relatively isolated and our resources are limited. So I really found artists here are more creative because they have to come up with new ways of creating artwork that can be shipped or developed or sold or pursued. You know, it's not the same as being on a continent where you can, you know, bring in people who can just drive in. You know, in Hawaii, shipping is always an issue. I have to say that, you know, the sticker shock that I encountered running this museum was quite extreme. I would easily say that, you know, an exhibition here can cost three times what an exhibition on the mainland would cost because of that. So I would say that those sort of challenges are there. And I would also say, because we discussed this before, you know, I had been raised here as a kid and I left. And, you know, growing up as a kid in the 70s and so on, 60s, 70s, 80s, there was a different gallery scene. There were many more galleries in Honolulu. And I would say now the gallery scene is really limited. And that's an essential part of the ecosystem. To be able to pursue art and develop art, you need a fully healthy, fully working ecosystem of all the parts. And the one thing that I noticed coming back is that there are parts of the ecosystem here that are not what it could be or should be in many ways.
What are the parts and what's not here?
Well, one part is being able to buy art and being able to purchase art. Again, you know, people travel here from outside of Hawaii, and so they're not going to necessarily ship a, you know, bronze sculpture or you know, something big. It's always going to be maybe a piece of ceramic or whatever. So that determines things. And then the other aspect is the cost of land and space and being able to show your artwork or have a studio space. I mean, it is so difficult. It is so expensive, and one thing that I learned elsewhere is that when you have plentiful space and you have inexpensive rents, then artists thrive.
As you came in and began to institute changes you felt necessary, Sean, how did you feel your suggestions were received?
Well, I would say that it's it was a give and take, and there was a certain amount of education because I had come from a different place, and I'd worked in other museums, and I had seen how those solutions worked to benefit the artists and the community. But I would say that I was backed by my staff, who were absolutely excellent, the board, who tried their very best to work with the community, communicate with the community. So I would say that it was a important and significant activity, and it has to happen. But ultimately. Bringing in new ideas is bringing in new ideas, and you know what that's like.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at what you're saying, Sean, and I'm thinking, you're young, you have these great ideas. The Kemper wants you because they think you're a person of foresight and fiscal, responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You can come into this town, your hometown,
mm-hmm.
and look at it and see, geez, my fundraising prospects here are very limited. The ability of me to stage really groundbreaking, earth-shattering exhibitions is also limited. What am I doing here?
Well, I have to say that what's wonderful about the people of Hawaii, and maybe I'm saying it because I'm someone from Hawaii, but we have to be super creative. We have to be very, very ingenious in our solutions. We have to be fiscally minded because we have limited resources because we're so isolated geographically. So we just have to be stronger and better and work harder to achieve those things. And I think that it's a healthy approach. Particularly when you're an artist and you really have to survive on very little, I think it's good that you're able to be creative and ingenious with your solutions. I would say that, as I mentioned, I found a very vibrant community, an arts community, and I have to say it was so. It's so vibrant, so interesting. And even my son is an art major now at the University of Hawaii, studying printmaking and other things. So it's something that I find, is an aspect of our community that maybe, it's not so easily found elsewhere because elsewhere there are more available resources, cheaper land, larger communities. More different industrial sectors. And so I think, I just think that, it wasn't as pessimistic as you put it. I was actually quite optimistic coming back. And it is, it is my home.
These are things
people.
You find out in process, apparently. But what kind of maybe cautions would you give to the person coming in now?
Coming in out as an artist, or what's your...
No, to the next executive director of the Honolulu Museum.
Oh, I see. I would say that I would give advice, but I wouldn't give any caution. I would say that you have an excellent staff, you have an excellent board. I would say communicate well with them. I would say... understand that Hawaii is different from other places. It's a special place. People here are very kind and considerate and polite. And also put your creative hat on. Like, get really creative and resourceful very quickly.
and make sure you don't have allergies.
Yeah, and make sure you don't have asthma issues.
Sean, thank you so much for your thoughts today.
Of course. Thank you. I appreciate your time.